Welcome to Golau, where we shed some light on politics, policy and polling in Wales and the world. This episode is one of four, featuring presentations from the Wales Governance Centre's Brexit One Year On event, held in the Senedd on, when else, the 23rd of June 2017. In each one of the Centre's experts looks at a specific aspect of Brexit from a Welsh perspective. In this episode, Professor Roger Scully explores his thoughts about whether the 2017 general election was indeed the Brexit election.
So it's exactly a year today since one very important vote. I'm going to talk this morning about another one, the recent general election. 2017 was meant to be the Brexit election. And in some senses, that's entirely appropriate, given the importance and complexity of Brexit. Brexit is, for reasons which will, I think, in part be covered by my colleagues later, Brexit is almost certainly the most difficult and the most complicated thing that the British state has sought to do since it fought World War II. This is not small stuff. It's perhaps therefore appropriate that the people had their say about how it is done. But when Article 50 was triggered on the 29th of March this year, the Prime Minister and the government were still insisting that there would be no general election. Although the Conservatives were apparently in a very strong political position and getting a Brexit mandate appeared to give them the perfect pretext for a general election, the Prime Minister was still insisting until mid-April that there would be no vote on this and that the Parliament elected in 2015 would serve its full term. However, on the morning of the 18th of April, Prime Minister May stepped out in front of 10 Downing Street and made a statement, a few of selected bits of which are on the slide here, and announced that she and the government had changed their minds. She suggested that the government, having such a small majority, was being placed under pressure by the opposition parties at Westminster. And she said, right at the end, towards the end of this statement, "Let us put forward our plans for Brexit and our alternative programmes for government and then let the people decide." So that was the public justification given for the referendum. So Brexit was very much placed front and centre of the reasons for calling this extraordinary general election only 2 years into what was supposed to be a five-year fixed-term parliament. The real reasons for the election seem to be several. First of all, as with all prime ministers who have inherited the job mid-term, Prime Minister May felt politically vulnerable, maybe somewhat weakened, without having had the personal mandate from the electorate that comes with winning a general election. By putting forward an election, by calling election based on a particular approach to Brexit, it seems that she would be likely to get a very clear public endorsement and would therefore be able to, not quite silence, but certainly marginalise political opposition to her approach. But perhaps most importantly, calling the election offered the possibility for Prime Minister May of being able, or at least that seemed at the start likely, being able to win a substantial parliamentary majority. And then, when things got difficult later, when awkward compromises had to be made, or if the economy turned down, she would have a substantial parliamentary margin for error. And perhaps most importantly, if the Conservatives won big, there would be a significant chunk of Conservative MPs in the House of Commons who owed their seats directly to her. And therefore, if she could have some ability to call upon their loyalty. So that's how things were meant to work. Now, this year's general election has been interesting in several respects because it does appear to somewhat challenge some of what seemed to be much of the most certain knowledge that we have about the politics of general elections. Some of the things that we thought we knew pretty much for certain about general elections are described on the slide here. First of all, it's been demonstrated through numerous studies that the official campaign period hardly ever sees substantial changes in party support. Even when we see, as with 2010 with Liberal Democrats, a large spike in the party support, in the end, that dribbled away pretty much to nothing. The Lib Dems ended up getting the sort of vote we expected them to at the beginning of the campaign. Most of the time, party support hardly budges in election campaign. Another thing we thought we knew even more certainly that party support doesn't change much is that divided parties do not prosper in general election campaigns. And this appeared to pose, you know, very ominous portents for the Labour Party, a party which had been very clearly and publicly divided for most of the 2 years of this Parliament, whose party leader had been openly and publicly rejected by around about 80% of his parliamentary colleagues, and a party which had seen numerous resignations from the shadow cabinet, such that Andy Warhol's old saying had been updated by some to reflect that in the future everyone will be shadow Secretary of State for Wales for 15 minutes. A third thing we knew, or thought we knew, is that the Labour Party specifically does not do well in elections when it is led by a clearly left-wing leader. The only instances of this that has happened in the past had seen the Labour Party being defeated extremely heavily, most notably in 1983. So given all of this, the portents were very good for Prime Minister May and the Conservatives and extremely poor for Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party. Things look even more promising for the Conservatives when we looked at the opinion polls. This slide here shows the full run of opinion polls between the 2015 general election and the 2017 general election. The top line is a moving average of Conservative support. The second red line is a moving average of Labour support. And we see that throughout the period until that sharp line towards the right, which is when the election was called, the Conservatives were always ahead. There is, if you look really closely and squint very hard, you can see just above September 2015, the Corbyn bounce, the line goes up about a millimetre, the red line. Conservative support did dip somewhat in spring 2016 due to a badly handled budget, Ian Duncan Smith's resignation, the Panama Papers, junior doctor's strike and so on and so forth. But the Conservatives remained ahead, moved substantially further ahead when Prime Minister May entered Downing Street, and entered the election campaign with approximately a 20 percentage point lead on average over the Labour Party. This was an extremely strong position to be in. However, when we look at the polling during the campaign period, we see, you know, the Conservatives starting with huge leads and some opinion polls giving them close up to or indeed on 50% support, while the Labour Party was getting well under 30%. Yet the Conservatives maintained these very strong support levels for the first week or two of the campaign, but then their support started to ebb. But the biggest change we see throughout this graph, which is the campaign period polling, is the steady rise of the Labour Party against many people's expectations, including, I'll be blunt, mine. The Labour Party actually consistently gained ground through the campaign and ended up doing much better than they'd done in terms of vote share than any general election since the heyday of Tony Blair. The other major thing we see through this graph is the steady marginalisation of the other parties. After 50 or so years when the trend had been away from two-party politics, this election saw two-party politics emphatically reasserted. We saw a very similar picture in Wales with our rather less frequent opinion polls. Basically, at the start of the election, we had a shock poll that put the Conservatives 10 points ahead of the Labour Party. They maintained this level of support and still had a 6 percentage point lead in the second Welsh poll of the campaign. But then things changed around pretty dramatically. And the Labour Party moved emphatically ahead and remained so for the remainder of the campaign. And that led us to this result, unexpected to many people, including me, and certainly not delivering the sort of election result that Prime Minister May had anticipated. The Conservatives, although gaining significant vote share from 2015, saw their overall seat total slip by 13, enough to push them from having a narrow parliamentary majority to being the largest party in a hung parliament. And the Labour Party achieved a vote share increase almost double that of the Conservatives and actually scored 30 seats more than they had done under Ed Miliband 2 years ago. In Wales, we see a rather similar picture of the Conservatives unexpectedly losing ground and the Labour Party gaining 3 seats. And indeed, the Labour Party gained here its highest vote share in Wales since the first Tony Blair landslide of 1997. So was this overall the Brexit election? Theresa May sought to make it the Brexit election, and that should have worked for her. So what happened? Well, a few things I want to look at here from some polling evidence. First of all, how important was Brexit? We know that in most elections, issues like the economy and the health service have been the top of voters' issue agendas. We know that in recent times, immigration, for instance, in 2015, came to the fore. A number of surveys asked people, you know, what are the most important issues in this election? And pretty much consistently, we got the same picture. This is from the final Welsh poll of the campaign. You see a very similar picture in all the other Welsh polls and indeed consistently in the Britain-wide polls as well. So the first dark blue bar on the left of this slide is Brexit. When people asked to name a key issue in the election, Brexit was the most frequently named issue. On this slide, health came second, immigration was third, and the economy was only fourth, something that was unimaginable, say, in the 2010 general election. But in terms of focusing the election around Brexit, Brexit being a key issue in the minds of many voters, the Conservatives were successful. This was, to many voters, indeed, the Brexit election. If we look then at the ratings of the parties on Brexit, again, this next slide takes evidence from the most recent, from the last Welsh poll of the campaign. Remembering how well Labour did in Wales, that should show Labour doing pretty well. But actually, the party best able to handle Brexit is clearly, even in Wales, the Conservatives. Well, unless you count don't know, other, or not sure, or none. And the Conservatives had a clear advantage over the Labour Party on what was, according to the voters, the most important issue in the election. So, you know, the election was apparently being fought on turf very favourable to the Conservatives. That should certainly have produced a very favourable outcome for them. In terms of the election debate, though, I mean, was this the Brexit election? In that sense, I think we have to say to a much lesser extent. Although Theresa May called the election on Brexit, talked about needing a clear mandate for Brexit, in terms of actual informed debate, consideration of the details, looking at alternative models of Brexit, there was even less than we saw in the referendum last year. And the referendum last year was hardly a model for the intellectually fastidious, and this year's general election was even less so. There was very little detailed discussion of alternative models of Brexit, very little detailed discussion of the pros and cons of different potential routes towards Brexit. So although the election was called on it, and although, you know, many voters recognised this was important, there was actually very little detailed debate. So what do we conclude then? This is a very puzzling election. The Conservatives started the election with a big polling lead, and pretty much all the conditions should have favoured them doing extremely well. They seemed a more united party than the main opposition party. The election was fought on turf of their choosing, at a time of their choosing, and they were rated by the public more favourably on the most important issue. Yet, their polling lead slipped. And in terms of the outcome, I think we can say this was not really a Brexit election. Because, you know, very unusually, the party which was most highly regarded on the most important issue actually saw its polling position slip during the course of the campaign. And Theresa May's own personal rating slipped alarmingly during the course of the election. Jeremy Corbyn's actually improved substantially. And so, despite enjoying this significant advantage on the most important issue, the Conservatives did not deliver the sort of mandate that they wanted. But although it was not the Brexit election in terms of outcome, the election will undoubtedly have consequences for Brexit. First and most obviously, that Theresa May has been denied her clear mandate. She asked the voters to decide, and they did. The only thing is we don't quite know what it is that they actually did decide. They delivered a very unclear verdict. The one thing that is clear is that the mandate that Theresa May sought to deliver the sort of vague Brexit that she was talking about has not been delivered. The second major consequence is in terms of the parliamentary and political situation. in a hung parliament without a secure majority, it's going to be much more difficult for the government to hold to a particularly clear line, most notably given the balance of forces within both the Conservative Party and Parliament as a whole. We know that within the Conservative Party there is a group of hard Brexiteers, probably numbering around 50 or 60, who are determined to deliver the hardest of hard Brexits pretty much no matter what the cost, even if that cost involves splitting the Conservative Party from top to tail. For many of these people, delivering Brexit is their life's work. At the same time, there are a significant number of other members of the Conservative Party who do not favour anything like a hard Brexit. Meanwhile, the Labour Party has also a rather ambiguous and unclear position. The party leadership is at best lukewarm about the European Union and has long been so. Much of the Parliamentary Labour Party, however, would privately favour remaining in the EU and would want to see, at the most, the softest of Brexits delivered. There is almost certainly a clear parliamentary majority for a soft Brexit. But given the weak position of the Conservative Party leadership and given the lack of enthusiasm of the Labour Party leadership for the European Union, it's not necessarily clear that the leadership to deliver that sort of soft Brexit will be forthcoming within Parliament. Finally, the impact on the UK's bargaining position. Well, sort of clear public endorsement that Theresa May sought has not been delivered. And we're in a position now where we have a government which is, in Norman Lamont's old phrase, in office but not in power, it appears. What we do know is that there remains considerable confusion about the UK government's position, and the clock is ticking. Jochen Bagnon.
We'll be making a video of this presentation available on Cardiff University's YouTube channel if you would like to review the slideshow.
Thanks for listening to Goli, a Cardiff University podcast. Subscribe in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from to have the next episode download automatically.